The recent announcement that the federal government is making the Dakota Access oil pipeline jump through some more hoops takes some of the edge off what had been a highly volatile confrontation. Standing Rock Sioux and many supporters opposed the plan to put the pipeline under the Missouri River, just upstream of the Standing Rock Reservation. An Ashland virtual reality operation, Shifting POV, as in POV point of view, sent four people to the Dakotas for the demonstrations, and they got 360-degree footage to be sure. They also got some tear gas in the face. All four Shifting POV members join us. From Standing Rock by phone, we have Caroline Running Wolf. Welcome, Caroline.
Oh, yes, hi.
Hi, good to have you here. Michael Running Wolf, are you there too?
Yes, hello.
Okay, and here in the studio we have Jairus J.C. Miller. Hi, Jairus J.C.
Hello.
And Aaron Moffat is here as well. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, good morning.
So let's walk backwards from where we are now, and let's start with you, Caroline and Michael. Give your reactions to the news of this past weekend. Caroline?
Well, everybody was just so excited when the news broke. It was funny because we were just walking around camp trying to find one of our interview partners, and people heard something on the radio, and then the radio announcer said, I have some exciting news, but I can't tell you what right now, and the radio cut out. And so it was just half excited, half fearful. Everybody was just walking around asking, do you know anything more? Do you know anything more? And then Michael might want to take over because he happened to end up at the Sacred Fire.
Sure. Go ahead, Michael.
So at the camp, the main meeting place is an area called the Sacred Fire, and there's a fire and an announcer stand. And I noticed there was an unusually large crowd, so I wandered over there with my 360 camera and kind of pushed my way into the crowd, was asking people, and then suddenly the president of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe got on the announcer and told everyone that the news, or the good news, and it was just a big eruption of excitement and happy, and there was drumming, and there was even a marriage right in front of me. Like, people somehow managed to get right in the middle and to conduct a marriage ceremony at the Sacred Fire during the good news. And from what I understand, the partying or the celebrations went on all night.
Now, nobody's thinking that this is the end of things, I gather. In fact, we were just hearing in the most recent newscast about the fact that people are still settling in for a long winter there. Is that what you're seeing, Michael?
Yes. I guess you would say it's a cautious optimism with a heavy dose of cynicism. Like, they've heard good news before. I'm talking to the people who've been there all the time. I have some family there who's been there since the very beginning, and they've said they've heard it before, where the government reassures them everything will be fine, there will be no continuation of the project, but then bad news usually happens afterwards. So I feel that there is a sense that there needs to be still support, and they also appreciate the media attention, because ever since the media showed up, things have been better.
Mm-hmm. Better in the sense
the weather.
That... Better in what sense?
So when we first arrived, when Jairus and Aaron got tear gassed, there was electronic surveillance and being used, and constantly there was aircraft, low-flying aircraft, constantly buzzing the camp 24/7. And during that time, it was nearly impossible to use your cell phone because of the electronic jamming they were using. And I think like stingrays or some sort and other stuff, military jamming equipment. So cell phones were almost impossible to use except on a high hill called Facebook Hill. And when the media started showing up, that all went away. And that was like around Thanksgiving.
It was actually Thanksgiving, first day that people could use their cell phones without necessarily being on Media Hill.
Really, Facebook Hill, that's an interesting name, and it sounds like that's where everybody was able to make their connections until that time.
Right.
All right, so let's talk to Jairus, J.C., and Aaron about, as you were part of the media presence, what convinced you to go there?
Instinctually, I realized quite early on that Standing Rock was going to be a shifting point for our dialogue around preserving our natural environment and especially our pristine biodiverse areas. So I was the first won the scout for the group and went out and shot the first film for our filmmaker, who is Aaron. So basically, I got the lay of the land and did his preliminary recon. So when he went out to shoot, he was very familiar with the layout of the camp and where the actions were taking place.
So you were like the location scout in a sense.
Yes, we play multiple hats in our very small team. So yes, I was the location scout.
We're talking to the people from Shifting POV based in Southern Oregon about their virtual reality video efforts at the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. With the standoff over the Dakota Access Pipeline, we have Caroline and Michael Running Wolf on the phone from Standing Rock, Aaron Moffat and Jairus J.C. Miller here in the studio. Questions, comments, thoughts about what you have seen and heard and the documenting of it, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So one thing to document, I mean, is the only video you have virtual reality stuff? What's the advantage, I guess, of having virtual reality cameras in a place like that?
We have a variety of different media types. Originally, I went out shooting both with a virtual reality camera and a traditional documentary format camera, 2D documentary style. During the recent actions, we managed to carry both. When we arrived Sunday evening for the most violent event in the these series of occurrences over the last 3 months, I was carrying my standard documentary camera, and we also had a small ultra-compact action VR camera that actually provides the viewer a sense of what it's like to be behind the camera, whereas my footage from the documentary camera shows you purely what I'm looking at. The virtual reality camera shows you can see me and Jairus in the shot as well as what's happening, and also things that happened behind us that we weren't even pointing the camera toward and wouldn't have captured otherwise.
So this particular day we're talking about, this is November 22nd, 2 days before Thanksgiving, so a Tuesday. What?
November 20th.
20th,
Sunday.
Okay. So this is Sunday you got there, right. So what? Why things seemed to be escalating about that time. Did you have much of a sense, I mean, having just arrived, for what was going on?
We had no idea what to expect. We arrived, I'd say, around 4 p.m., 5 p.m., took a quick tour around camp with Michael and Caroline, and as we were unpacking from the vehicle into a tent, an alarm went up in camp. Gunshots had been heard at the bridge, and a request for all vehicles to go to the bridge was put out. So we got our stuff together as quickly as possible and went out to the bridge and unwittingly ended up there for all of it.
Were all four of you together, Jairus?
Actually, at that point, Michael and Caroline were with family members, so it was just Aaron and I. We were standing right on the front line with the water protectors. That was probably not our safest choice, but we felt it was vital to document, first of all, the tremendous heroism and bravery of the water protectors, which is really quite a moving thing. And this was really a peaceful, prayerful demonstration. And then this onslaught of highly militarized police and National Guard units in full military armor shooting on us. It was a pretty extraordinary, horrifying, sublime experience all in one fell swoop.
Now, you've already shared some of your work with the public on YouTube, and in fact, we took an audio clip from some of what happened that day. Let's hear this and talk about what we're hearing.
Is that tear gas? Okay, Jairus, come down. They're firing tear gas into the crowd on the bridge. People have been hit, it looks like. Not sure if they're tear gas or something else, but they seem to start fires in the grass. Okay, we're good.
Okay.
Hold the flashbang.
Need everyone back up on the roof! Back up on the roof!
So what were those bigger booms, Aaron?
Those Those are presumably the concussion grenades.
Mm-hmm.
They launch them just over people's heads most of the time. You cut out just before, I think you might hear in the footage, we're about, I'd say, 40 yards from where these are going off, maybe 50, 60. The crowd is on the bridge. We're down in actually near the river at this point, trying to get away from the main firing by this time. The concussion grenades, one, we presumably have a recording of the girl who was hit in the arm with one and lost much of her arm to it. I'm actually kind of glad you cut out before that because the scream is rather primeval and extreme terror. But you're hearing the cannons, you're hearing the military loudspeaker at times, you're also hearing the loudspeaker from the leader in the protest on the bridge requesting people to fall back to the bridge and get out of the danger zone.
So you got speakers going in both directions, people with amplification devices on both sides of this confrontation.
Right.
It sounds chaotic. It looks chaotic. And the advantage, of course, with the virtual reality footage, and even on YouTube in 2D, you can pivot around. You can swing the view around because of what's provided there. And so you can see you guys are right there in the middle of the tear gas. I mean, was it right in your faces there, Jarris?
Yes, it was. We were thankfully we have good friends, LaFleur Vetter, who is a documentary filmmaker, is on site there, and also Aaron and we just tag team to watch each other's backs. Aaron at one point literally dragged me out of a tear gas canister. Because it's disorienting and it's overwhelming. I don't recommend it at all. It's a horrible experience.
Shifting POV is a Southern Oregon film collective. We're talking to the four people who went from Southern Oregon to Standing Rock to take a look at what was going on there. We have Jarris J.C. Miller and Aaron Moffat in the studio with us. On the phone at Standing Rock, Caroline Running Wolf and Michael Running Wolf. This is a conversation you are welcome to join. You may have questions for people who've really been there in the middle of it all. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. There was a mention made, Caroline, about some family connections for you and Michael. Do you have family in the area?
Yes, Michael does.
Mm-hmm.
So Michael might want to talk to
sure.
you about
go ahead,
that.
Michael.
I think both do. We just couldn't find the crow encampment or at Zalaga, she likes to go by. But for the most part, a lot of my family and distant relatives were part of the early activities, and some of my close friends who I met through ceremony and whatnot actually were in front of this at the very beginning where they were doing the youth rounds and or had even started against the pipeline protest back when Keystone XL, a different pipeline prior, I think, in years past. And so my family kind of has a activist streak.
Mm-hmm.
My sister is on the FBI watch list because of her activity in AIM, American Indian Movement in Denver, which is silly because basically it's like a food kitchen. But it has a history of taking over the BIA building and taking over the Alcatraz prison back in the 60s and 70s from the Free Native Rights Movement. So a lot of my family were present there. And I think that this sort of natural, particularly my Lakota family, to participate in these kinds of events. I had an uncle fly all the way out from Portland to participate in the veteran action, the Veterans March. So I kind of feel like I'm sort of the quiet nerd compared to the rest of my family.
All right, we're talking to Michael Running Wolf and Caroline Running Wolf, Jarris J.C. Miller and Aaron Moffat. Here's a call from Pat in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hey, thank you for being out there. It's so important. I'm blown away that I didn't hear anything about someone losing their arm. And I'm just shocked that the administration has taken this long to even, react with what's been going on out there. It feels Kent State-ish. It's just I'm blown away. Is that true that some gal almost lost her arm?
Aaron, why don't you take that one because you were closest to that.
As I stated in the video, I think, on our Facebook and maybe the YouTube post as well, I don't think this is simply an issue of indigenous rights by any means. This is an issue that faces all Americans, all people around the world, when a president who was awarded a Nobel Peace Prize sits beside while these events are happening and watches without making a very direct action to stop this on U.S. soil. Yes, from what I've heard, they are still attempting to save her arm. At best, it's 20% functionality after surgeries, I think. A vein was taken from her leg to go back into her arm. But from the people who were right next to her, the bone was fully exposed after the blast.
This was the same night, I guess, where the water cannons were deployed. Is that right?
And
you got some good shots showing icicles hanging off of things. As you spray water in 22-degree temperatures, that's going to happen.
Yeah. These people are facing 26-degree temperatures, hours of water cannoning. I think the water cannons went on for maybe 5 hours. From the medical facilities there, I heard reports of 300 minor injuries from rubber bullets and being hit by tear gas canisters, because they were actually targeting particularly medics with the canisters.
And press.
Mm-hmm. And also 500 cases of hypothermia and 1,000 cases of mental trauma from that night.
Let's take another call. We have Rob and Eureka on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. Rob, you there?
Hi. Yeah, I am here. I just got back from North Dakota, and I think it's important to bring up that a lot of North Dakota people, both the natives and the others, feel that this is a California versus Washington, D.C. fight, and they feel like their state issue has been totally overridden by California and that politics. And so there's by no means consensus among the Indians on this issue. It just isn't there.
All right. Thanks for that, Rob. Caroline, can you address that?
Well, I'd like to start out by saying that due to Michael's family connections here, we've been talking to the tribal chairman of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe. We've been talking to tribal councilmen of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. And there is massive support from those both tribes in South and North Dakota for the people that are at the camp. And the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe is doing everything they can. The Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe, they have many of the protectors at the camp are actually from Cheyenne River Sioux. And I'm just guessing that the caller, I'm sorry, I forgot his name, might be talking more about the Mandan, Hidatsa, Arikara, the three affiliated tribes around Fort Berthold, because it is their oil that might be transported in the pipeline. So, yes, there's differences like that. And one more thing about the non-native North Dakotans. I don't know any non-native North Dakotans, so I can't give you a full overview, but I do know that during the activities stopping the Keystone XL pipeline, there was a movement started by some Native American women that was actually an Indian cowboy alliance against the Keystone Pipeline.
All right, so all sorts of alliances form in here for sure. Give us an idea, Aaron and JC, what you plan to do with this, because this is part of a larger project, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And
what you plan to do with the VR video,
right?
People just joining us. Yeah.
Actually, we've been extraordinarily fortunate in that Michael Runningwelf and I were part of the Oculus Launchpad program, which was an effort of Facebook and Oculus Rift. So, and we have won a scholarship, all of us, the four of us, to support this effort. A one part of our film, a portion of our film, will be created and distributed through Oculus Rift and Oculus Launchpad. We are also supported. This shows how this effort is bigger than all of us. We are also supported by Google, and we are part of the Google Odyssey Jump program as well. And they were the ones that actually gave us this amazing 360 camera to take with us, where we conducted most of our interviews. So they will also, we will cut another version of this film for them, and then Aaron, as a documentary filmmaker, is going to be doing his own work as well.
Okay, just about a minute left here. I mean, I'm having a little difficulty imagining somebody wanting to look at this with a virtual reality headset on. It's pretty intense stuff.
I can agree with you there.
And you were there.
We will, when beginning to cut the footage initially at a coffee shop, I actually became quite agitated while rewatching it. And I think many people will feel the same way, but it's important for many of us to be able to experience what's there, to have an accurate perspective of what's happening.
Will there be more clips dribbled out to YouTube in the near future?
Yes, we're going to do short releases before before we actually do the full-on films.
Okay, the Filmmakers Collective is called Shifting POV. You can look for it on YouTube by that name. In fact, we'll provide some links on our website as well to get you there, and it's a pretty interesting video. I want to thank them all for joining us here today. Ian Standing Rock, Caroline Running Wolf, Michael Running Wolf here in the studio, Jairus J.C. Miller, and Aaron Moffat. Thank you all for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you very much.